Thank you. It's a pleasure to be able to speak on this nice occasion. Here's my title. So, I've known David a long time. I have a little graph here to show that. It's a plot of our world lines. Our world lines. I'm not sure there's a lesson here, except that we overlapped in Berkeley for 4 years and in Princeton for 3 years, and in each occasion we collaborated some. So we were graduate students together, and as you heard last night, we even shared an office at that time. While we were graduate students, we wrote a paper together. Here it is, July 1965, a few years ago. It's a great paper. I haven't looked it up on Spires. I suspect it's unlisted. I don't know if this paper's ever been referenced or not. It might have been. Yeah, but they've backlisted some papers that are cited. But, the reason this paper isn't cited isn't because it isn't clever, but rather because research has gone in other directions. And we prove a non-trivial theorem here. And the theorem is that we're studying the analytic S matrix and using unitarity and analyticity. We argued that if you go around an n-particle branch point in a scattering amplitude and look on the second sheet whether there's an m-particle branch point, that it's not there on the second sheet. So that's a non-trivial thing to prove, but we did it. Okay, so in the Princeton era, we wrote a number of papers together. I'm not going to tell you about all of them, mostly in the year 69-70. Here's one of them. Which is also with Naveau and Sherk, and we were doing string theory, although it wasn't yet shown that this was string theory, so we didn't know we were doing string theory, as nobody did at this time. But in any case, we computed one loop amplitude in the bosonic string theory, studying tachyon scattering. So we're scattering open string tachyons. So I'm saying it in modern language. We were scattering open string tachyons, computing all the one loop diagrams, which were just the cylinder and the Möbius strip. And one thing we discovered was, we did all the amplitudes, but one thing we found was that when you have the cylinder and you have external particles on both of the boundaries, that there were surprising new singularities in the closed string channel. Of course, it's not surprising to you because you know they're closed string singularities. But it was surprising to us because we didn't know about closed strings or open strings. And one problem we had was that those were branch points rather than poles, and of course they're supposed to be poles. And a year or so later, Lovelace pointed out that if you had done a 26-dimensional momentum integral instead of a 4-dimensional one, they would have been poles, which was yeah. So that was kind of interesting. The same result was obtained at the same time independently by Susskind and Fry. As I mentioned, at Lenny's birthday last year. It's a Reggie pole with vacuum quantum numbers. Okay, so now I will move on to my technical remarks. So, as I discussed in Strings 2001, the low energy effective action for gauge theories on D-brains can be written as a sum of two terms, a Dirac-Born-Infeld term and a Chern-Simons term. And when you compute these in the boundary state formalism, as some people do, first term, the Dirac-Born-Infeld term, originates from the NS closed string sector, and the Chern Simons term arises from the Ramon closed string sector. And today I will only discuss this term, which in many cases can be determined by anomaly cancellation considerations. And since that's a subject close to my heart, that's what I'll do. So let me just remind you of the structure of such things. So I'll be interested in D-brains that have an even-dimensional world volume so that there can be anomalies. So we'll have a DP brain with an odd spatial dimension so that the world volume dimension is even dimensions, 2n. And the Chern-Simons term for such a system of D-brains, so we have a bunch of coincident D-brains, there'll be some Chern-Simons term which can be written as the integral of a differential form of degree 2n. And this general structure that these things always have is that they're linear in the Ramon fields. So the C's represent a Ramon 0 form, 2 form, etc. And then they couple to differential forms. So these are wedge products. They couple to differential forms X, which are made out of the gauge fields and the gravitational curvature in combinations which form characteristic classes, which just means that they're closed and gauge invariant. So that's the general structure of the Chern-Simons term. And I want to illustrate how one finds the Chern-Simons term for the type 1 superstring. This amounts to redoing the well-known calculation that Mike Green and I did in 1984, but I'll do it in a more modern sort of way, a little more elegantly than we did in those days. And then I'll discuss generalizations. The generalizations I'll be discussing later are where you add brain-anti-brain pairs in addition to the basic system. But I'll start with the basic system without the additional brain-anti-brain pairs before I discuss the generalization. So dealing with these chiral 10-dimensional theories, one has potential Yang-Mills and local Lorentz anomalies, which arise from unlooped diagrams associated with chiral fermions or chiral bosons going around the loop. And their contribution gives a one-loop anomaly, which is an anomalous gauge variation of the effective action, which can be written as an integral of some differential form. And this anomaly G is best characterized in terms of a characteristic class in two dimensions higher, so in 2n plus 2 dimensions. And it's related to, and this characteristic class encodes the anomaly through the standard descent relations, which implement the Wessimino consistency conditions. So this being a characteristic class, it's closed, and locally it can be written as an exterior derivative of a Chern-Simons-like expression. The Chern-Simons expression is not gauge invariant, but its gauge variation is the exterior derivative of a 2n form, which is basically the anomaly. So the best way to characterize anomalies is in terms of these I's. And Alvarez, Gamay, and Witten, in their famous 1983 paper, worked out all possible contributions to I from any chiral field you would ever want to consider, which was very helpful. So in all formulas I'll show you, I'll drop overall normalizations and only be interested in the relative strengths of things. So the rules are that if you have a Weyl fermion and some representation rho of a Yang-Mills gauge group, that the contribution to this expression I is the 2n plus 2 form part of this expression here, where so these are all differential forms and null products are wedge products. People who've worked on these things know all that, but I'll say it anyway. And so this F is in some representation rho of the group, and so and A is some expression made out of the gravitational curvatures called the Roof index or the Dirac index or Dirac genus, and the expression for the A is written, or A roof is written down here at the bottom, whereas if you bring R to a canonical form because it's an anti-symmetric matrix of two forms, you can write it this way, so these lambdas are two forms, and then A is given by this expression here in terms of these eigenvalues. So it's a convenient way of encoding the dependence on the curvature. So that's what this A is. And this thing is called a Chern character. There's some similar expression for gravitinos, which I won't need to write down explicitly. And for the self-dual tensors, which exist, for example, in the type 2B theory, there's also a contribution which is related to something called the Hirzebruch index or polynomial. And so that's the other thing we need to know is this formula for L. So L is described in a similar way to A roof, except it involves just a different function, so it's given by this product. So, and there's a neat fact about the relation between L and A roof, which was pointed out by these people, and that is that the A roof and this L expression are related by this identity. And if you just take the two formulas I showed you, this identity is an immediate consequence of this formula, which you can check in your head. So this is going to be useful in what I have to say. Now, in the type 2B string theory, one of the important results of Alvarez, Gomez, and Witten was that the anomalies just simply cancel. So that theory has a pair of Majorana-Weyl gravitinos and dilatinos and a self-dual tensor. And so if you take these three expressions, extract the 12-form part, it cancels. So I'm going to exploit this in my analysis of the type 1 theory, even though the type 1 theory doesn't have this field. And so the way you do that is you recognize that in type 1 theory, you have half as many gravitinos and dilatinos as you do here. And therefore, the 12-form part of this, which is relevant to the type 1 theory, can be re-expressed this way. And using the relation between this and the Hirzebruch thing, that's equal to this. So this is a convenient formula. So now you can write down the anomaly for the type 1 theory if you had an SOM gauge group. So here's the part from the gravitino-dilatino, the way I just explained. So we're really interested in the 12-form part of this, but I don't bother to say that, just to save writing. And then here's the contribution from the Majorana-Weyl fermions, which are the supersymmetry partners of the SOM gauge fields. So being the supersymmetry partners of the SOM gauge fields, they're in the adjoint representation of SOM, which is an antisymmetric tensor. So that's why this trace is in that representation. Then there's a nice identity for the trace in the antisymmetric tensor, which relates it to the trace in the fundamental representation. So here's the trace re-expressed in terms of traces in the fundamental representation. These Fs are antisymmetric tensors, so the traces only are non-zero for even powers. And therefore, I can replace these exponentials by cosines. So using these formulas, now I now has this form here. And again, we want the 12-form part. Now, for the 12-form part, what's convenient to do is to replace this 2F by F and the R by R over 2. But the total power of R and F, since they're each two forms, is going to be 6. So if you adjust by a factor of 2 to the 6, you can rewrite this by this. So that's why the 1/4 turned into a 16. So this is not equal to this, but the 12-form part is equal. Other terms have been rescaled by other powers of 2, which don't matter. And then similarly with here, I write this with R over 4, and that rescales by 4 to the 6th, which brings this 1/16th up to a 256. And then once you have this expression here, it can be written as a square here. And that follows using this identity I pointed out earlier. So we've got this anomaly. So we're interested in is the 12-form part of this thing. So the thing that we were just squaring is this expression y. So our anomaly polynomial is the 12-form part of y squared. Now, for the anomaly cancellation story to work properly, it's crucial that y not have a constant term. So when you expand this out in differential forms, it's a 0 form plus a 2 form plus a 4 form, and so on in general. Actually, there are no 2 forms and 6 forms here because we only have even powers of f. But if you had unitary groups, there would be. So in any case, this L thing starts with 1, so it's 1 plus order r squared. Similarly, the A roof starts with 1 plus order r squared. But the cosine, of course, starts with 1, but when you take the trace, this isn't a fundamental representation of SOM. So trace cosine of f is therefore m plus order f squared. And now I said it's crucial that this not have a constant term. So therefore we need that m is 32, and therefore the gauge group is SO32. So in the earlier work that Mike and I did, it was equivalent to what I've shown you here, but it was kind of more brute force, and we had magical cancellations of weird numbers. And this kind of analysis sort of avoids that, which I think is nice. So anyway, if you take this y, since there's no zero form part, it's a four form part plus an eight form part, etc. The only thing that, and y squared, remember, gives the anomaly. So the 12 form part of y squared is only this, because that's the only way you can make a 12 form out of y squared. Once you're at this stage, you're back to where we were before, and the Chern-Simons term can be written this way, and am I giving some anomalous transformation law to this two-form Ramon field, you cancel the anomaly in some standard way, which I won't review. There's an alternative description, which is a little more symmetrical in some regards, which is instead of writing that C2 times Y6, or Y8 rather, that I had before, is to write just C times Y and then take the 12-form part of that. So C is a sum of a 2-form and a 6-form in this case. And so this would be C2Y8 plus C6Y4. So this may seem strange because I've added this additional term to what I just wrote in the previous transparency. But actually, this Ramon 6-form has a field strength that's dual to the field strength of this 2-form. And using the duality relations, the effect of this is just to double the answer. So if you adjust mu by a suitable factor of 2, then everything's the same. Incidentally, in this way of describing the story, Y was written as a sum of two pieces, this piece and this piece. Let me call them YB and YC. And they have a nice interpretation. YB is the boundary contribution. So in this boundary conformal field theory way of computing these things, this is understood in terms of disk diagrams where the boundary is attached to D-brains. And so it's the D-brain contribution, or the boundary contribution. And this YC, it corresponds to a world sheet that has a cross cap on it, or alternatively, it corresponds to a disk diagram that ends on an orientifold plane. So in this type 1 string theory, the usual words are that it has an orientifold plane that carries Ramon charge minus 32. And then it had their 32 D-brains that give a canceling Ramon charge. And those numbers up to factors of 2 are just the constant pieces of these two terms. When you square this, which you have this form that characterizes the anomaly, which is actually the thing you compute from Feynman diagrams, and so the square has these three pieces, and this is the contribution of the cylinder world sheet amplitude. This is the contribution of the Mebius strip world sheet amplitude, and this is the contribution of the Klein bottle to the anomaly. So that's a review of the old work, just slightly modernized in the presentation. So let me discuss now adding brain-anti-brain pairs to this. After I did this work, which I discussed with Ed Witten, we'll write it up together soon, we realized that this part of the story had also been worked out by Sugawara, who's now visiting USC at the Caltech USC Theory Center. So instead of 32 D9 brains, which I just had, I'm going to add some more D9 brains and some anti-D9 brains. So by adding the same number of 9 brains and anti-9 brains, we aren't going to change the total Ramon charge. Of course, when you do this, we now have an unstable system because there are open strings that connect the 9 brains to the anti-9 brains, and they have a tachyonic mode. So that's just this is well known to people who've been in the subject in the recent years, that this just reflects the instability that these brain to anti-brain pairs want to annihilate. So that's why there's a tachyon. However, even though there's a tachyon, you're instead of, what it means is that you're not at the bottom of some potential, you're at the top of some potential, but still it's a classical solution of something, and so there should be a consistent perturbative analysis of the system, even though it's unstable, and that means there should also, the anomaly cancellation should continue to hold even in this unstable system. So the gauge group now is this, because you have this group for the D-brains and this group for the anti-D-brains. And it turns out that, I'm going to give you the reasoning backwards here, starting from the answer and working back to the question. Just easier to do it that way. Is that in the expression, remember the anomaly was given by y squared, and that, among other things, involved the trace of cosine f. So the answer for this gauge group in this context is going to be only modified by having by replacing the trace of this cosine by what I call the super trace of the cosine, and by that I simply mean the trace over the SO32 plus M gauge shield. So those are associated with the 9-brain. So that's this term, and then subtracting a similar expression for the SOM, which is the contribution from the anti-brains. So all the anomaly reformulas, the Chern-Simons terms, then are given just by that simple substitution. Now, one important fact, one reason this is a good answer, is that the constant term here. So we have the trace of 1 here is 32 plus m. The trace of 1 here is m. So the difference is still 32, and so that'll still cancel the Orianifold contribution. And that's just the fact that the Ramon-Ramon charge is continuing to add up properly, which we built in. I could have said we, instead of putting in that we had an equal number of brains and anti-brains added, I could have put in arbitrary numbers and learned they had to be the same doing it this way. So working backwards, you can ask, what are the chiral fields associated with this brains and anti-brains that gave this anomaly? So, of course, these results can be derived from a microscopic analysis, and then one can do the analysis in a more forward direction, and that's what we'll do in our manuscript, and that's what Sugimoto did too. Let me continue in this way. For the 9-brains, it's pretty clear that the open strings that connect the 9-brains to the 9-brains are going to continue to give left-handed Majorana-Weyl spinners in the adjoint of the gauge group, just as they did when M was 0. For the 9-9 bar brains, you get bifundamentals. That's no surprise, because one end of the string is on one and the other end of the string is on the other. And they turn out to be right-hand, meaning they have the opposite chirality from these guys. And then for the 9-bar, what came as a bit of a surprise to us at first is that instead of having adjoint fermions, you get fermions that are in the symmetric tensor representation of the SOM. So they're MM plus 1 over 2 rather than MM minus 1 over 2, as you might have guessed. There are many reasons this is correct. One thing that's nice about this is that the 9-brains, introducing these anti-9-brains, break the supersymmetry. And this symmetric representation is reducible. It has the trace, which breaks up as the singlet plus the rest. And the singlet fermion here is the Goldsteino associated with the broken supersymmetry. So that's nice. Well, anyway, it's easy to derive this result from a microscopic analysis. I won't do that. Rather, I'll give you a sort of a heuristic rule which gives the right answer. And to get the super trace, formally we needed M to be negative for anti-brains in some formal sense. So you have SOM, but you want to take M negative. So what does it mean to take M negative? Well, you have this representation, you replace it by this. Right? That's replacing M by minus M, and that's equal to that. So that makes it clear that you had to do that. In the case of a unitary group, so I'll discuss in a moment theory with unitary groups, the same kind of rule, the adjoint will still go to the adjoint. the same chirality. But if you had a fundamental, m goes to minus m, and the significance of the minus sign in the case of a fundamental is to flip the chirality. So let me turn to the 2B theory. I already told you that in the 2B theory, the anomaly is just plain cancel between the fields and the supergravity multiplet. But we can do what Mark Srednicki considered a few years ago, and that's just to consider modifying the type 2B vacuum by adding M D9 brains and M anti-D9 brains. Again, it's unstable, just as it was when we added brain anti-brain pairs to the type 1 theory. But we're going to get a in type 2, when you get brains like this, you get unitary groups. So associated with the 9 brains, we're going to have a UM group, and associated with the anti-9 brains, we're going to have another unitary group, UM. So this will be the gauge group. And they're going to be chiral fermions now. So besides the supergravity multiplet, which is unchanged from the 2B theory, we have an open string sector from strings connecting these various brains. So here, from these guys, we get adjoint Majorana-Weyl, which is the supersymmetry partners of these. And here we have adjoint Majorana-Weyl also. And then we have bifundamentals. Actually, the supersymmetry is broken, and completely broken. And there were two supersymmetries. But both of these adjoints of UN really contain singlets. So that there really are two Goldsteinos hidden in here. So you work out the anomaly. Well, we already said all the gravitational contributions cancel. So the whole anomaly is just given by these guys. So you just get the A roof times the trace of e to the if for these three pieces. So here's the 9 brain part. Here's the anti-9 brain part. And then for these bifundamentals, you get this. And now we need an identity again. So the relevant identity, which applies for the adjoint of a unitary group for the Chern character, is this. So using that identity, one finds that the total anomaly factorizes just as the y times its complex conjugate, where y is equal to this. And it's important, again, that the constant term should cancel in order to have a consistent theory. But it does, because this group and this group have the same rank. They're both m. So we built in that the Ramon-Ramon charges are canceling. So that's why we put an equal number of brains and anti-brains. And that ensures that the constant terms here cancel, which is crucial for consistency. So that's the cancellation of the Ramon-Ramon tadpoles, which here is relevant for the anomaly analysis. This time, there's only a boundary term. There's no crosscap term. That's familiar because type 2B strings are oriented, so you only have oriented world sheets. So there's only in the square, there's only a cylinder diagram, no Möbius strip or Klein bottle. And as before, the anomaly can be canceled by adding a Chern-Simons term, which we can write this way. But now, this Ramon-Ramon thing is a sum of a whole bunch of terms. So C0 multiplies Y10, C2 multiplies Y8, and so on and so forth. But there's self-duality here. So the C0 is dual to the C6, just as it was. And the C2 is dual to the C4. I'm saying it wrong. I'm sorry. Let me say it right. C2 is dual to 0 to 6, 2 to 4. Is that right? Yeah. I'm confused. Anyway, here, 0, 6, 2, 4. I think that's right. So, yeah, because on our previous one, we had a Y4, which multiplied C6, and a Y8, which multiplied C2. And they were related by duality. So that's this. Oh, gee. Sorry. Anyway. Right, of course, C4 is self-dual, I'm sorry. C4 is self-dual, this is wrong. C4 is self-dual, C4 has a self-dual field strength, I know that perfectly well. I did work on that at one time. And, C2 is dual to C6, C0 is dual to C8. That's I'm the gut. So this is wrong. Okay. Now, in these formulas, both here and in the type 1 case, I didn't put in the tachyon fields. I only showed the, I just worked at zero tachyon fields at the top of this potential. But various authors have studied how the tachyon fields should enter into an expression like this. And, for example, there's a recent paper by Krauss and Larson, which explains it very nicely. And so let me just tell you the answer, because it seems like a nice thing to mention. So the formula we had involved this super trace, which was the trace in the UM for the nine brains minus the trace in the UM for the nine bar brains. So the idea is to generalize that super trace a little bit. And to generalize that super trace a little bit, what one does is to introduce what mathematician Quillen introduced, called a super connection. It's mentioned in Witten's K-theory paper, for example. Where you form a 2m by 2m block in this case, where so this is the m by m matrix of gauge shields for the nine brains, this is the m by m matrix of gauge shields for the nine bar brains, and then your bifundamental tachyons, which are complex in this case, are put in the off diagonal blocks. Notice these are one forms that are odd objects, and these are zero forms that are even objects. In any case, out of this thing, you form a supercurvature by doing the usual thing. And then the rule for incorporating the tachyons in the Chern-Simons term is to replace the supertrace I had before, which corresponds to t equals 0. And just including the t's by taking the supertrace of the exponential of this thing. It's a little bit complicated, but you can work it out. And the supertrace, so when you get some complicated matrix like this, the supertrace means the trace of this block minus the trace of this block. So that's pretty much my story. I haven't even used all of my time. Maybe I have. Oh, I have. Good. In any case, I've analyzed a variety of six-dimensional models by methods similar to what I've described here. They're a little more complicated, so I will spare you that.
Were your D9, G9 bar pairs condensed to tachyon condensers? Suppose that you end up with a supersymmetric theory after everything. But the tetra Lagrangian you write down for the D9 bar is not supersymmetric, right? There's no spontaneously broken supersymmetry there.
There is spontaneously super broken. Remember, I pointed out there are Goldsteinos.
Is it spontaneous or explicit?
Spontaneous.
I see. So your full D9 bar effect of Lagrangian, that the Lagrangian has supersymmetry.
In that formal sense, yeah, because they're Goldsteinow fields.
Okay. When you analytically continue your tonal loops, you connect the crack, you usually get complexity, which is illustrated by your counting of the number of states. Why don't you get complexity?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I was confused about that for a while. And, I don't know what to say, except you don't. in the case of the type 1, we considered the possibility that the D9 brains are carrying a symplectic group. And there were a number of things that didn't work if you did that. First of all, the bifundamentals would have been complex, would have needed to be doubled, which wouldn't have worked. And also, the symmetric tensor in the symplectic case wouldn't have a singlet you could pull out. And so you wouldn't find your Goldsteinow that you need. So there were a lot of things that didn't quite work. Yeah, well, that's an interesting proposal, but it's not the right answer.
Mm-hmm.
That was so delicate.